This is a show about individual experience and personal identity. There may be times when folks use identifying words or phrases that don't feel right to you. That's part of what we're exploring here. Please listen with an open heart, and as always, I welcome your polite, engaged feedback, and I encourage you to continue the conversation in your own life and with your own community. Welcome to Query. Hey, Queeros, Cami here. Today on the podcast, it's Vince Coconato, a.k.a. Coco, from the hit viral dance sensation Bob's Dance Shop. This is a very cute convo. And speaking of things that are cute, I'm on tour. I'm going to be in Atlanta June 17th. I'll be in Raleigh June 18th. I'll be in Brea, California, the Brea Improv on July 7th. Portland, Oregon, July 8th, Burbank, California, July 20th, and New York, August 16th through 20th. Will you please go to CameronEsposito.com/tour, get tickets, and come see me live. I miss you. I just really, really miss you. Okay, enjoy the episode. I've been feeling wrong, but I'm still holding on. Darling, I know it's careless. I always have guests introduce themselves on the show. Would you introduce yourself?
I would love to. So I'm Vince Coconato. I go by Coco for short, like coconut, but drop the nut. And I am a vibe maker. I'm a joy activist and I'm an artist.
Yes. This is the first question. And
sure.
Is this your real last name?
Coconato?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a triumph of a last name.
It's pretty cool.
Just incredible. Was there ever a time in your life where you did not like it?
Never.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good last name. Just...
Yeah, it's a good last name. And I grew up in the South, so whenever I'd play baseball and I'd go up to bat, they'd say, now up to bat, number two, Andrew Coconata. And they would say Coconata like that, which was like, it's not Coconata, it's Coconato. But just the way that they rolled it off the tongue.
It sounds like an expensive drink.
Maybe it is. Maybe we need to make that.
I'm ready for that partnership.
Okay.
So I want to talk a little bit about why, you're a vibe maker. You work specifically, I mean, how I'm familiar with you are these sort of like viral, I guess, are they still called flash mobs?
We call them flash bobs.
Right, because it's Bob's Dance Studio that is the name of the larger entity that you work with.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the like creation of this group of people, how these folks came together and what you, can you just describe for anybody who hasn't seen it? And they should just, first of all, like go to your TikTok or Instagram so that they can really see what we're talking about. But you can also describe it. It's a podcast.
Yeah. So Bob's Dance Shop is an experience, like an immersive dance experience.
Yes, as in studio, Bob's Dance Shop, of course.
That's okay.
Keep going.
And Bob is, it's an energy, it's a mentality, it stands for be our best. So it is all about activating the most alive, the most present version of yourself. And it's being, having the audacity to be truthful into the world. And everybody is Bob. So Bob is not a person. Bob is like an energy that I'm Bob, you're Bob. It's kind of like an invitation, an inclusive party that we're all inviting everyone to. So Flash Bob is the take of the flash mob that were like popular in the early 2000s. And our spin is just like doing it in a way that's just fun and quirky. And it's like, take us seriously, but don't take us too seriously. And as I was explaining about the joy activism, it is much needed in this world today. And the flash bobs are like, it is activism because it's us being boldly who we are. It's not even like forcing joy, because joy is something that should come authentic. It's more so just taking our light and sharing it in a public space that's not expecting it. So a flash mob, if you don't want a flash mob, it's a surprise dance performance that takes place in public. And then the flash bob is just something that took the internet by storm mid-pandemic Lovato. So
do you have a dance background? Like a trained dance background?
No, I in high school I played sports. I was a leader. I did all the things that I was afraid to dance. Baseball was my main sport. I also played soccer. I ran cross country and I secretly was really good at volleyball, but I couldn't show that because girls played volleyball or gay boys played volleyball.
Right.
So
yes.
Another secret thing was that I loved softball more than I loved baseball. And I was a really good underhand pitcher, like better than most girls would throw. And I had to hide that because people were like, whenever I would do it really well, people would be like.
So when you say secret thing, how did you even know that? Are you talking about like a gym class experience or are you talking about practicing at your home?
My sisters played softball and I would pitch to them. I would like, they would warm up like, and I had pitched to them underhand and I really loved it. I loved the flow of it. I just loved like, it's just something that came natural to me. But whenever I would show it in public, like people were like, oh my, you're a really good pitcher. That and volleyball, my sisters played volleyball too. One of them grew to become a volleyball coach at some point in high school. So, and then I didn't really actually start playing volleyball until I moved to California.
This is really interesting to me simply because, I mean, of course, but I have so much familiarity with people who were like cultured female, raised as women, who talk about playing softball and wishing that they could have had access to baseball. Like, that's like been a big part of my wife is a softball player. She was a pitcher in high school. And my ex-spouse plays baseball, loves it. So I feel like I'm very familiar with that direction of movement and the sort of like forcing people who are being raised as women to like pitch slower with bigger, you know, with a ball with a larger circumference, all this stuff. I never considered that you might have wanted to play softball. Never.
Oh,
it's never
come
up for me.
Softball is way more entertaining to watch. It's much faster paced. Like, it's just like even the concept of the pitcher is closer to the batter. That means the ball gets there sooner. Baseball, it's like the wind up and then the look at the face and then you throw it. It's like, let's get to the point. Like softball, it's like they like hit it. The ball's hit and it's just moved really quick. And there's also like the excitement of being in the fans, like being a part of the crowd and the cheers and the chants. It's just like, I don't know. I felt more belonging. Like I would get more excited going to see my sisters compete in softball tournaments than playing in my own baseball game.
And the thing that is so, God, I mean, because the way we gender stuff is so wild. The reason I'm saying this is I'm from Chicago. And have you ever played 16-inch softball / do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. So
enlighten me.
12-inch softball is what you're talking about. And those balls are like still pretty hard. But in the Midwest and in Chicago, there is a larger softball. It's like, it's 16 inch and it's soft. It's legitimately soft. So you can't hit it that far. You can't hit it as far as you can hit a baseball or softball. And people play without gloves. So like my uncle, who was a college baseball pitcher, eventually played 16 inch softball. And it is a hyper masculine sport. Because you like break your fingers constantly because you're catching this ball that is, even though it's soft, it's still like, it's not like soft like a pillow. It's soft like compared to a baseball. And you're catching it with your bare hands and throwing it with your bare hands. So it's like this hilarious continuum where it's like baseball, softball, and then the snake comes around and eats its own tail, like 16-inch softball. So like that's the way we break it down that minutely. Like it's wild to me.
I'm always curious, who's the one that invented that? Like, who's the one that was like,
I don't know.
Let's make a bigger ball,
I don't know,
slightly softer, and we can only catch it with our bare hands.
I don't know.
Like, I just like, who comes up with these things?
I don't know. I mean, we can go on this for a whole tangent.
Right. I think the question was like, how did you get into dance? And I was saying athletics was kind of my training. And I was always artistic. Like, I grew up on a street where my best friends and I were like the Goonies. And so we were putting on concerts, competing over who was going to be Justin or JC from NSYNC. And we would like shoot VHS films and we would go invite our neighbors and like have them come watch our movies or watch our concerts. And our production company was Twisted Oak Productions, which is the street that I grew up on.
God.
So the fast forward is that my current business is Twisted Oak Creative, and Bob's Dance Shop is the doing business as. But all to say that in an early stage, I was creative, but I was kind of like playing sports is just what you did. And I grew up at the baseball field. Like my mom ran the concession stand. My dad was like the head umpire. We were always at the baseball field.
Right.
So sports was kind of the defining element. It's where I kind of learned my athleticism, where I trained. And then when I went into high school, I continued to play sports. I picked up band. I was in the marching band. And by my senior year, I had never really danced publicly. I never learned a choreography. I always aspired. I always wanted to be like Kesey Lloyd and Chevalier Moore, who were my two classmates that always competed in the dance competitions and they won. I was like, I want to be like them. And so fast forward 2009, this is the summer of 2009, and it's going into my senior year in high school. I'm visiting New York City with my family. I went to meet a friend at a restaurant. My dad calls. He's like, you won't believe this. Michael Jackson just died. And I was like, kidding. And so it's like all kind of happening at once. I go and tell my waitress. I said, hey, I think Michael Jackson just died. And she's like, no way. And they turn on the news and like big news announcement. And I pay my check. I leave. And this woman comes up to me. She's got a microphone. She's with a news station. And she's like, Michael Jackson has just died. What's your initial reaction?
Wow.
It's like, all this is like going down within like 5 minutes.
Wow, okay.
And I just was like, I remember that moment and just kind of like all the things that were going through my head of like, what? How do I even process this? And the long story short is I went home and I just dove deep into Michael Jackson's music videos and just truly admired the artistry. And I really loved not just the choreography, but it was like the makeup, the costuming, the cinematography. It was like, this is like what I want to do. And I was class president, and I wanted my class to be known for something beyond sports, beyond the state championship. I also wanted to bring all the cliques together because I didn't like cliques. I just wanted everyone to be one happy family. So I sent kind of a memo out. I said, hey, we're going to do a thriller dance at the homecoming pep rally. Anyone that wants to be involved, this is the sign up. And so I had, of my entire senior class, I had about 70 classmates who I started teaching. We would rehearse for like 3 days out of the week after classes. No one knew about it. And I realized I was a really good dancer.
Keep going.
And I'm a really good teacher. Because I didn't have professional dance training, I had this way, this language in which I could relay the message to these other non-dancers, how to like hit the move on the beat. And on the count, and there was like these words, the words would tell you like booty bounce, clap and slide, you know, like, and you would, it was just, it made it fun, but it was helpful for someone who just doesn't have rhythm or they don't even know their left foot from the right. And so this happened. We go to perform it at the pep rally, and you're familiar with pep rallies.
Yeah, I was the, like, I was the mascot of my high school. So
of course.
Pretty fucking familiar.
You get it. So pep rallies, they have a low bar. Like, you're not expecting Jabberwockies to come out with a dance performance.
No.
You're expecting some skit that was thrown together in a couple hours and some teachers doing some goofy things.
Maybe not even a skit, just yelling about the other team.
Exactly. So we go out and we sprawl across the gymnasium floor, and everyone's cheering and hooting and hollering, like, we see you, Coco. But they didn't know. Like, their expectation was like ground zero. And I was like, oh, they have no idea what we've just prepared. So we all are zombieing and the thriller's happening and it's taking formation. And then we take our first bump, bump. And like a machine, everyone's heads and their shoulders, it's just locked. And the whole gymnasium lost it. I mean, they were just like jaw to the drop to the floor because they just were not expecting us to have any synchronicity whatsoever. And that feeling was like, oh, I love this feeling. Like, this is what I'm living for. Like, the surprise element. I love surprising people. I love it when their bar is low and I can exceed that bar and give them a dose of unexpected joy. And so at that senior year, I was 18. That's where I discovered I'm good at this. I'm passionate about it. And I enjoy it. So I went to college. I joined a fraternity. still closeted. The fraternity and the university campus had this giant competition called Lip Sync, which is like equivalent to Pitch Perfect. You've seen the movie. And the competition is like real thick. Like you got to win. Like everyone wants to win the competition. And so I started creating the choreography for my fraternity. And in college, I did a flash mob because that was back in the early 2000s when it was big. And we did this big, like 350 person flash mob on campus. Similar thing where it just brought everyone together and it was a lot of fun. And so that's where I just trained myself, and I have been training on the fact of like, I create choreography that's applicable, it's accessible, it's inclusive, it's meant to invite dancers and non-dancers to basically come together and just to like break down the barrier and just have fun. So the structure of Bob and what I'm doing now is kind of off of those same principles of like, well, dance is more so a language rather than just a skill set. And these are some of the tools and the movements that we do that kind of get you involved. And that's also how we're able to do the flash bob. Is typically it takes like weeks to rehearse, but these we meet 3 hours before we actually record, and then we do it once and we're done. So we're meeting like 100 people at one time. We have this full dance, Bob's Dance Shop experience, where we take you through the whole ice melting and just like letting loose and breathing and connecting.
But I want to break down some of the stuff that you're talking about before we continue to move on. I know you were in the midst of talking about what you currently do. Let's go back a second, because there's like, I have so many follow-ups. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what I was going to ask, first of all. Because I think it's like, I actually think one can't move past this these days. The Michael Jackson of it all, the being inspired by Michael Jackson, that you're being your first experience organizing, obviously the Thriller dance, iconic, and truly like changing the music industry, changing what we thought was possible in terms of music videos. And also a fucking complicated figure. Somebody who I mean, I believe the stuff I've seen in documentaries. I don't think people make that up. I don't think there's like a reason to. And so I'm just curious, like if that, and maybe you don't have an answer to this, I don't know, but I am curious about your, I don't know, relationship with an artist that, because when he died, when you would have been choreographing this, sure, we had like jokes, we had rumors, but we didn't have the kind of information that we have today. Mm-mm. And so I'm just curious if that colors your memory of this experience, or maybe it doesn't, I don't know.
No, it does. I mean, that has come up a lot, and I have to credit it for what it is. And what I'm realizing is what I was inspired by was the art, and without at such a young age, not even realizing so much about what was actually happening behind that art, it's not so much for me where I make it excusable. I don't have any excuse for it. I don't have any justification for it. What is true for me is that the art itself has always been an inspiration, but I will say that my idol is not Michael Jackson. I would say two of my idols, queer idols, would be Freddie Mercury, who I didn't really truly have a connection with until I would say maybe 8 years later. I didn't truly understand Freddie Mercury. I wasn't connected to Queen until I really dove into the story behind Freddie Mercury, and I saw how he embodied what I truly aspire to embody, of just like true authentic existence on stage, exuding all things, just going for it, not having like so much structure, but just being extraordinarily you on a public stage.
Sure. Like, also, his music is gay.
Yes.
Which I think
didn't even realize that.
Another thing that's very funny, because in my youth anyway, and I'm you know, especially somebody playing sports, it's Queen got, there was a shit ton, there's a shit ton of Queen that got moved into like a jock jams sports zone. We're like, we're the champions, all that stuff plays at, you know, basketball games and stuff like that. And it is funny because I remember when marriage equality happened and then that song came on the radio and I was like, oh, wait, this one too? Because all of Queen's music is fucking queer. And not just like coded. I mean, like openly queer. Same with George Michael. Like, I don't know what we were as a community substituting like for just active queerness. But good job to the folks who, the like adults, the straight adults doing mental gymnastics and substituting that out. Cause I don't even know how they did it. It truly is like they're saying, I am having sex with a man. Let me describe that to you. And for some reason, it's being misinterpreted.
I'm grateful for that. I have so much immense respect for it because it was so much harder to do it then. And yet they were still doing it. Mm. Freddie Mercury was wearing women's clothes on stage.
Yeah.
He was shopping in the women's section. Like, I do that. I wear women's clothes. I shop in the women's department.
Right.
I'm just, we're talking about our idols evolve. Michael Jackson is less of an idol because of the backstory, but I cannot deny that music video and all that went involved into that music video, which is more than Michael Jackson. It's the direction. It's the costuming, like,
He didn't choreograph that.
No. That art, for what it is such an inspiration for me. Mm. And those idols have evolved. And I would say the living version of that artistic expression for me currently is Beyoncé.
Was that your second? Because I was going to ask you, because you said you have two. You said Freddie Mercury is the second Beyoncé?
There's Beyoncé is tied.
Okay. Oh, she's gonna be so pissed to hear that. Yeah, who's the other one?
Beyonce. It's the artist entity Daft Punk.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's why I say I can't say them, but it's their artistic, like Beyonce and Daft Punk for me embody, like if they had a child, and including with a threesome with Freddie Mercury, out pops Bob, and like that's my style. It is like on display. There is both like the helmet that Daft Punk conceals their identity and preserves their art is what Bob is for me. Bob is something that is much bigger than Vince Coconato, much bigger than Coco. It's kind of this vessel that exudes superstar energy. And also just the intentionality, like in the purpose and the details of their story and the music that comes out. Same with Beyonce. It's like, everything that is exuding is just very intentional, very purposeful. It's not just like, oh, I'm just making things to make things, which is totally fine. But something that I relate with is I'm such a hyper-intentional, detail-oriented person. And so Beyoncé is that living version. And I have never seen Daft Punk live, and I hope that one day they come back together and they do a show. But I have seen Beyoncé live.
Me too.
And it was the best live experience I've ever had. And I couldn't help but think, like, this is what it was like to see Freddie Mercury on stage. This is what it felt like to see Michael Jackson, like, shining on stage. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
On the tangent, but.
You know, I feel like for me, I also would put, because I am super impressed by folks who can maintain intentionality over time as well. I think that's extremely difficult to hold on to that. Because it's one thing to be able to do it for a period of time, but like, Jesus Christ, to like the discipline and I just think longevity is a really interesting piece for me. And another person I would put in that category is Lady Gaga, because I think she has done such an amazing job of like preserving her ideal throughout a much longer stretch than most people have to. I mean, like, Taylor Swift is also amazing. I think one thing that's more amazing about her is like her actual genius songwriter, singer skill set. That's different than what Lady Gaga is doing, which is kind of like, it's just a whole creation. She literally even goes by another name like you do. She has a persona that she's creating. She's separating herself from that. I also relate to that as a comic, actually, because like the person that, I mean, my business, entity. Well, not my company, because I have a company that's called something else, but my like person that people are buying, that's Cameron Esposito. It does share my name, but like that's not my humanity that's on stage there. That's the Wizard of Oz that I've made happen. So we could talk about that for a long time too. I completely understand what you're saying. I'm super interested in it also. And I think there's a good pivot here. Because also when you're talking about not being trained in dance and then opening it to other folks who are not trained, there's a couple things that come to mind for me there. One is the barrier to entry that is money. Because folks have to be able to pay for classes. They have to have parents that would drive them to classes in order to go as kids, which is in the dance world, it's actually, you know, technically when you're supposed to start. Like there's stuff that you can start later, but if you're like trying to launch, say, a traditional professional career, that all happens very young, because then your body breaks, because you truly break your body almost on purpose by the time you're like 30. So, you know, those folks that are training that way, like that's a very, there's a high barrier to entry. But what you're talking about is a really different barrier to entry that I think TikTok, even those boy bands, you know, like NSYNC, there's been a shift there around like availability in a dance space. Actually, that I'm also part of. I take dance classes.
Do you?
I do, yeah. I took dance classes when I was a kid against my will and hated it. It was terrible.
But now it is in your will and you're choosing it.
I choose it as a self-healing structure. Like I've gone to, there's like some kind of movement-focused, like raucous party classes here in LA, you know, like there's a place called Dance Church. There's a place called Pony Sweat. And I've done those things. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm taking ballet classes, adult ballet classes.
I'm impressed by that.
It's cool. It's a formative wound. I'm revisiting a formative wound. Because I was a jock like you. So I don't know. And I also, so the money barrier to entry thing, and I want you to jump in and talk about this, but the money barrier to entry thing, and then I think the other one is the like gender conformity. Because especially in something like ballet, you literally don't wear the same clothes. Like like men wear, like little boys wear like black tights and a white t-shirt. And then girls wear like full pink. And that's and there is no confusion about who is who. But if I had some confusion about who I was, that made dance like genuinely dangerous for me. So it's not just the barrier to entry financially. I think there's a barrier to entry in terms of how gendered it is. And I'm just curious if you could talk about, I'm sure people talk to you about this. Maybe not. Like I'm talking about other dancers, people who are part of the flash mobs.
Yeah. I mean, we are like breaking down a lot of walls, breaking a lot of rules. And that is part of the queer identity, is queer is disruption to what is normal. And so much of what we do is not so much centered around dance. It's really centered around self-expression. We call ourselves a paradise for self-expression. And what we're here to provide you are some of the tools to help you break down the prison cell that's here that doesn't allow you to express your fullest self. And it's harder for trained dancers to come into a Bob's Dance Shop experience, and much easier for anyone just who doesn't know dance to walk in and be like, this is great. And because when now we have earned respect, we've kind of earned our stripes with some of the professional dance community, where I don't feel like it was like that in the beginning. Now we have so many new Bobs, new dancers who are like, this is liberating for me. You don't understand how much joy I get. Like, this is why I joined dance in the first place. But like dance took that out of me, because it is, it's a structure, it's a conditioning. And to be able to move your body. I mean, movement is language. If you're going to Japan, you don't speak Japanese. yet you move your body in a way that exudes your vibe, your energy, where someone who is Japanese looks at you and is like, and I've done that. I just did that at a wedding. There was a Japanese girl who didn't speak English. And we had a full-on dance party.
That did feel very specific. So I'm like, I know, this is very specific. So this has happened. Yes. You were at a wedding.
Happened. Yeah. Like, and she spoke Japanese and we just connected and we had this hour-long dance communication we never said a word. And her mom reached out to me and said, you have no idea. I have never seen her dance like that, or I've never seen her move like that. And it's because our bodies we communicate on such a energetic level of vibrancy. And that is what Bob's Dance Shop is about. It's reconnecting. It's not like this is something new. It's let's show you where your truth lies, and it's within you. It's not something that's external from you. And part of what prevents us from tapping into that internal is our mental barriers. And so, okay, what are those mental barriers? So it's the labels that we come in. It's the roles we come in. I'm a man, I'm a woman. This is what I wear. And so beyond even just dancing, fashion is such a big part of how we express in that space. So like for me, when I talk about Bob, it is the intersection of fashion, of music, of dance, of cinema, of theater, of like all things in which you can really express yourself, even comedy. And it's like, I haven't even, until now, and knowing what you do, it's like, we put comedy into our movements. Like, in dancing and hitting our mark, our faces, like, look what I'm wearing right now. Our vibe is saying, take us serious enough, but don't take us too seriously. And the way in which we say that without saying it is we hit our pocket. Okay? That's the part that says, take us seriously.
Wait, you what? As you do what?
We hit our pocket.
You hit your pocket. Wait, what do you?
Oh, is this, that's a term? That's a term. Like when you're in the pocket, you're hitting your mark.
Oh yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah,
your hands are in the pocket. It fits nice.
Okay.
Sorry, I should have specified. So it's the synchronicity. The synchronicity, right, is what it's what unifies the whole. But it's the individuality amongst that unity. It's the facial expression, the personality, the eyes, the face, the teeth. Like that is. That's the freedom when people come and they're like, oh my gosh, I want to do that again. It's because they've never had permission, even though we don't need permission to do that. But in the society, we do need the permission. We do need someone to be like, let loose, loosen your shoulders.
And this is really working for you. I mean, not just in terms of your videos going viral, but y'all were at Coachella very recently, on stage at Coachella. How was that?
Amazing. Amazing. That has been a dream and it still is a dream. I think the bigger dream is that we want to be producing our own music and having our own show and not just featuring and supporting an artist because we love the artists that we support currently. We were with Sophie Tucker and Sophie Tucker are like besties for us that has developed within the last 2 years. And since 2016, I have gone to Coachella. And despite the reputation that Coachella has amongst being like influencer, like materialistic and like showy.
I feel like that only exists in LA. So I feel like listeners that aren't in LA might not even know what the fuck we're talking about. But well, it's like a giant desert festival that has definitely gotten turned into like a scene. It's a scene. It's like a place to be seen with an outfit on, maybe in like a VIP tent. If for some reason
I would say it's like the most commercialized music festival.
Yeah, that's a good way. Yeah, sure.
You know, it's a very commercialized music festival. I mean, like it's highly broadcasted to the world, and so because of that, it has high stakes.
Yeah,
and so I'm going to look at the bare bones of Coachella and explain to you why it's important, why it meant a lot to be on that stage, is that because of the commercialization and what Coachella has become, artists who perform there are presenting the most highest expression of their art. They are pinching pennies and using every bit of the budget that they didn't even have to invest in this show because it matters.
people are going to write about it. People are going to see it. People are going to talk about it. Because the proximity to LA, people are driving in who are actually able to make moves in terms of folks that they would want to push forward career-wise. It's not just like Beyonce's performances being broadcast from there and the headliners, but more so just if you can get talked about, then that's a big, it huge. Has like an impactful career.
Yeah. And so therefore it's incentivized to do something unique, to mm-hmm. do something original and to just like be your best. And so I love going to Coachella because I feel like the artist in which I'm listening to on Spotify, I'm going to see their highest expression and I'm going to see how they vision their, how they see themselves and how they, like they're bringing their best. And I get so inspired by being amongst that energy and just receive that artistic display. And for years, I've been watching it being like, I want to be on that stage. Like I want to be giving what this person is giving me. And that was over the last 8 years. So it was very surreal to be on a stage and the energy was reciprocated, stepping on that stage. I was like, yeah, I've got my friends in the crowd and like, I'm going to give everything because it matters. And it also, it matters to Sophie Tucker. Like Sophie Tucker, they launched their brand new show. I mean, brand new stage design. They were releasing new music on stage. It just was like, they were there because it meant a lot to them. And by sharing that stage with Bob Stanshop, it's like the boys, we were there and we're like, let's give this experience everything we have because it matters to us. It matters to them. And this crowd wants it. So.
Because I want to go back to you saying that you want to be producing the music. I think I'm just unaware of that. Is that already something that is in the wheelhouse of this community that I'm just like not aware of?
I don't expect you to be aware of it. Most people aren't aware of it. Everything that we do usually catches people by surprise. Like people think like, oh, that's the Flashbob guys. They're like, oh, those are the TikTokers. It's like, I've had a vision for my art for a long time, which goes way bigger than what anybody publicly can see. And I don't expect anyone to get that. And a lot of times I don't talk about it because I'm a firm believer, like the more you talk about the aspirations that aren't there yet, it almost validates that you've gotten there and you don't work as hard for it. So for me, I just keep things and I just take one step at a time and I'm like, okay, let's show up here. Let's show up here.
So
I can talk about it. Sure. I'm just, what I'll say is, we're moving to New York. We're moving to New York within the month. And part of the move to New York is a personal decision for personal growth and also for business growth and business development. And just like wanting to get uncomfortable, wanting to challenge ourselves, wanting to just really be in the hustle and bustle of a new city and to network. And not in like a networky way, but like a way that's just is like, we want to really go for it. And because there's going to come a time where we aren't able to dance the way that we can dance now. And I don't want my art to be limited by my physical face or by my physical body. So there is an evolution of how I want the art to grow. And there's a world in which we are producing original music. And that's not so distant into the future. Like I see that within the next couple of years, there's also a world where we really want to dive into the fashion industry. We just did our first fashion show with a designer in Nashville. We have some more, basically invitations in New York when we're moving there. And then there's the television element. You know, we're TV personalities. We're just slowly being discovered as that. It's just that there is so much more. It's just what I'm able to do and what I have access to do. And more immediately is through dance. But beyond, like the Flashbobs are how we bring the community together. They're fun, you know. We're making memories. That, but then there's the dance videos. Like when we shoot our dance videos, I don't know how much boring you've done on our page.
Yeah.
But like that's where I have fun. It's like, how can I?
It's just you. It's not a public.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
So.
That is, then let me just ask you like a nitty gritty question. Is this financially supporting you right now? Is this how you're making your living? And yeah, is that true for the whole team? Because there's a team of folks. So this is supporting the whole team. And is that coming from videos? Is that coming from bookings like Coachella or this fashion show in Nashville? Or what are the like revenue streams that you're able to break down right
now? Yeah, great question. The accumulation is we do sponsorships. We're very picky on those. I do not just do a sponsorship for a paycheck. It very much has to align with who we're collaborating with. For example, we do a lot. We're doing something with Kiehl's for Pride in New York. And so that's a really nice paycheck. When we do those sponsored collaborations, and most of the time it's like flash mob activation. So it's a brand like, for example, Netflix hired us to do a flash mob for J-Lo's documentary that came out last year. So we went to the red carpet in New York, we flash mobbed, and it was awesome. So it's brands will hire us to do flash mob activations. And the really cool thing is that it's a niche market that we specialize in.
Like, right.
We would be, if anyone's looking to do a flash mob and to do it in a way that's fun and original, like they're going to come to Bob's Dance Shop and say, hey, can you guys do what you guys do best? So that's one big way of how we receive money. We also do live appearances. So Sophie Tucker hires us. They bring us everywhere. This tomorrow we go to Vegas. We're playing at a festival on Friday. We go to Vancouver on Saturday. So we have a consistent income stream of live shows. We also perform with Purple Disco Machine. If you're familiar with Purple Disco Machine, he also brings us on tour. We will be playing with him at Pride in New York City. So if you happen to be at New York Pride, there is a concert in Central Park that is for Pride. And so we'll be performing on stage. And so we have that outlet in which we support other artists. And then when we do our flash mobs, we don't really do those to make money, because part of it is just like, we really want this to be accessible to as many people. So we do a ticketed price, which is like, if you have the means, pay it. Then we have a half price, basically just like a cut in half. It's like, if you don't have the means, but you just want to be able to participate, pay this. Really, to us, that's not how we're making money. Like, we use that money to pay for our videographer and our editor to like produce the video. And then we have merch, which hasn't launched yet. We're currently waiting.
Merch is coming.
Oh, it's coming so soon, and it's been a process. But that will be a revenue stream. And then trying to think, am I missing anything? Like, even beyond flash mobs, people will say, hey, can y'all make one of your cool dance videos and just like somehow incorporate?
So it's Kiehl's, you're symbol. Like, you're doing a flash mob, but you're also like putting moisturizer on everybody's faces. Very important.
Not really. Yeah, we are. We're like,
You're really tenderly doing the under eyes. I mean, this makes a lot of sense to me. You know, I think this is, I mean, I certainly make money touring. So I completely get that. And I know, I'm sure most people these days are familiar with like a sponsorship angle on making a living. I think the thing, so when you're talking about you, because I actually didn't know this. So the participation in the flash mobs that has that's basically like a ticketed entry for people who want to participate that aren't part of the Bob's Dance Shop team.
Right. Like
they're doing it as a hobby. They're doing it as something to a social event. And that makes sense.
Think of it like it's a dance class.
Exactly.
Like
that's yes.
Like you're signing up to get for an instructor, except you're getting five instructors and it's each of the Bobs.
Yeah.
And we take you through like the Bob's Dance Shop experience, which is like, it starts with a breath. We all breathe together. It's all about kind of establishing equilibrium. And we stand in a circle, do the breath, and then we break into warm-up, which is like a jazzercise. And Lucas leads the jazzercise warm-up, which is the whole process is about breaking down the box. It's about melting the ice. Because ultimately, 100 of these people have signed up. Some people are driving 2 hours. There's been people who've flown in from a nearby city. Like, people show up for these. And they don't know each other. And yet I know that our vibes are the same because you've chosen to be here and you like our vibe. And I just need you to understand that you are safe in this space as soon as possible, because ultimately we're about to go perform in public and I need you feeling your most confident self performing in public. So the process to get there, we start with our jazzercise. Lucas leads that. Then I will lead our bobography, which I teach some of our signature moves, which are very, very accessible. This is the people's dance. We've got the flamingo, which are free range flamingos. And we've got Larry Lasso, and we demonstrate how Larry Lasso works. We've got the pizza maker. And then Cameron with a K, he teaches a twerk class, which it's all about destigmatizing the booty and using the butt in a way that activates
your... I need to take this part. This is the part that's, I think, most important. I think I can do the hands. I feel I'm very comfortable breathing. But the booty. This is my area of greatest learning.
Cameron is the queen of booty. He really walks you through, like, here are the techniques. Here's how you lift the butt cheek up and then down. And then he tells you, like, you can run with it.
Oh gosh, this is really important,
like,
for me.
He like balances the glass on his butt. Like, it's like all about finding the power in your butt.
And not
being so afraid to do that. Cause so many people are afraid of, like, being too, you know, putting yourself too out. Like,
I just don't actually know how to do it. That's really the thing. It's a blind spot for me.
You need to have a one-on-one with Cameron.
Cameron and Cameron collab, like, for sure.
Exactly.
Actually, truly, this I think would be life-changing for me.
I think you would love it. And you would love Cameron with a K. And you also can't say Cameron without saying Cameron with a K, because it's with a K and he's branded himself that way. So needless to say, we've got the jazzercise, we've got the bobography, we've got the bootography, and then we open up the runway. So then Lido splits and parks the C. We gather on either side and we go over the rules of the runway, which is basically have fun, but also don't clog the drain. So once you enter the runway, keep flowing, and then you file at the end. And then if you're not on the runway, you're cheering for the person and you're rooting for them to be the best version of themselves. And so by the end of this runway, we've now taken you through the experience. Then here's the choreography. Y'all ready to learn the tutorial? And by then they're like, yeah, like they're feeling themselves. So then within a 45 minute time period, we teach a 4-measure choreography. And then in the next 15 minutes after that, we rehearse it 3 times. And then we dart, we walk, we disperse. And I say, when you hear the music, it's go time.
Oh my God.
It's like a rush of adrenaline because it all happens.
Yeah, this sounds, it's so very quickly, intense. It's very intense.
But not intense in a bad
no,
way.
No, 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 but like, I just mean the time frame. It's like, you're getting right into it.
Yeah. And all to say is that that's our time and our energy. So that's why we charge a price.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is the ticket, but we also charge a discounted rate because we don't want, like you were saying, I don't want money being in the way of you experiencing this joy. So if money is a situation, we get that. I've been there very recently. Here's a discounted rate. And if you can't even pay the discounted rate, let us know. Just come on by, you know? But that is how also integrity, especially in LA, if you have a free ticket, people will sign up for a free ticket and not show up because there's no integrity. There's no accountability held to that ticket. However, when you pay even a small fee, even if it's $5, your integrity and accountability to show up is there. And so that's something that I've learned, is that we charge a ticketed price. Even if you're not paying for the full ticket, it's just something that validates that you have signed up. And so we are expecting your participation.
Yeah, I relate to that. Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, this is...
But that's not our moneymaker. Like when we do it for fun, that's not our moneymaker. When we get hired by a brand to say, can you do a flash mob to activate this new launch?
Right.
We're like, yeah. And then the other thing I forgot to tell you, our main form of business, it's actually what we're known for beyond flash mobs, is vibe curation. So
yes,
parties would hire bobs to basically come and get the party started and keep it flowing. And we do an exceptional job at that. It's like, you're a host and you just want your attendees to just be at ease and just having the best time. And you want everyone talking about the party like months later. You bring the bobs in and it's like, we just like
Well, you know, I have no idea. I mean, yes, I get that that's what you're known for, but like your fingers just did like a disbursement. Like I'd like to, I mean, in that it's all, it just sounds very esoteric. Like talk to me, give me like a concrete example of what you're talking about.
Okay. Don Julio just launched a new tequila. It's a rosé tequila. And they had a big launch party at some mansion in the hills. And they said, hey, can we hire the Bobs to do to vibe curate and also to do a performance. So it's usually packaged in the same thing.
Yeah.
So we start with a performance and it usually is a surprise performance. So it comes out of nowhere in which like the music happens and then we pop out and it, we do the choreography. And then once we have everyone's attention, we have a microphone, we introduce ourselves and then we say, we got one more dance for y'all. And then we do another dance and everyone cheers. And then after that, the dance, Bob's Dance Shop experience of like the runway, like that's something that happens organically. So we just start strutting, dance parties, the bobographies, like we activate the energy in the space. We like, I don't know how, the biggest hardest part is explaining what we do because when you see it, you understand. It's just like, we're the party starters and there's more than one of us. When you have more than one party starter, it, I don't know how to explain it. We activate. And also the fashion is another element because when we show up to these, we're very intentional with the party, the color scheme, and we bring the utmost fashion because that's a way where people just go, yes, like your vibe, your outfit.
And are you like, talking to folks afterwards? Like you're, are you milling or are you?
Oh yeah. Like this is,
yeah.
No, this is not transactional for us. Like, yes, we get paid to do it, but when we're there, it's like, we're making friends. Like the same way that if we were going to any event, like we make friends and it's not for any other reason is that that's just who we are. Like we have no fear going up to new people and introducing ourselves. One of the big things that we do is we remember names. So like that is a Bob staple. You meet a Bob, we're going to remember your name and we're going to know how you spell your name. Like if I meet a Brittany, unanimously, if anyone meets a Brittany, the question is it T-T-A-N-Y or is it T-N-E-Y?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very and they important, always go,
very important detail.
Oh, it's actually A-N-Y. Like, thanks for asking. No one ever asked me that. Mm-hmm. For me, I have this visual remembering of that's Brittany with an A-N-Y. When I see Brittany 45 minutes later, I'm going to call Brittany by their name. And she's going, or they are going to feel like, oh, wow. Like, that person asked for my name and actually remembered it because that's just a hard thing that people just don't do. It's a way of seeing someone for their essence. And the fact of being remembered is just a feeling of empowerment that we just don't do enough. And so like that is one of the main ingredients is that we go and we make friends, but we're not just fakely making friends. It's like, we're really genuinely meeting you, introducing ourselves, having conversation. And then I'm going, hey, Cameron, like you got to meet Brittany. This is Brittany with an A and Y. This is Cameron with a K, not with a C. And it's like, then new friendships are happening. And then Brittany's like, oh, you got to meet my friend Kelsey. And it's like, was it Kelsey, like S-E-A or S-E-Y? It's like a whole thing.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
It is fun, but it ultimately is like, it's just seeing people. Like when, I don't know, when well, you feel seen for your name is such a personal thing. And when someone cares enough to know how that's spelled, it just goes deeper.
Sure.
It's like, oh, you're more than just going through the motions of saying hello and what's your name, but you actually genuinely care. There's a difference in that. And like, that's what I'm having a hard time explaining to you is that so much of who we are is you get it once you meet it.
I don't feel confused. I think what you're talking about is kind of skipping small talk. You know, I know for me that if there's somebody that I would like to meet, especially somebody who's like career I respect, it's my preference would be for me to meet them after they've seen me do stand up because then they have like context for me. It's like easier to chit chat.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about of coming out with a performance and then talking from there, there's like a baseline thing that everybody has in common, which is that they just saw this thing that happened right here that. Because otherwise it's very hard to figure out, I think for a lot of people, like what's the first thing you say, you know? Mm-hmm. And even the name thing you're talking about, it's a lot of the stuff you're talking about is kind of like a first thing, a continued thing when people might feel awkward or they might be milling without a sense of purpose. You're talking about kind of connective tissue is what it sounds like to me. And I certainly think anybody listening who's like been to a work event, been to a wedding, tried to show up as an adult to anything understands that, like, without connective tissue, it's super difficult to just,
yeah,
like, chit chat around and feel chill, at least for me. You know, so it makes a lot of sense why people would be interested in hiring, especially if it's like something, especially if it's something like a party for a brand, which again, maybe if you're, maybe if you do a pretty different type of a job, maybe you don't totally know what we're talking about, but it's just substitute any work event. It's like that work event where people are clients and you, like, there's stakes sort of, but you don't even know why you're there and you're not supposed to, you don't know what you're, like, totally supposed to get out of it. I mean, it's that experience. And
yeah,
so if anybody who can make that more comfortable is a very valuable person, because that is a rough one. I think that's one of those.
It is.
You know, it's the company Christmas party when you just got hired like a month before and you don't know anything about anybody, but you somehow have to, like, put on a cute outfit.
Yeah.
So I want to be respectful, like, of your time and just say that, you know, we just are chatting for an hour. So there's like 4 minutes left, 5 minutes left. And something I always do is ask folks to shout out a queero. And that's like a person, place, or thing that made you feel that you could be who you are today. And I know we talked a little bit about Freddie, you know, Beyonce. I don't know if you want to.
I have.
Come on, baby. Let me hear it.
You know Alok?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I see Alok and what Alok is doing. And for me, it just validates the sense of, like, oh, yes. Like, I just have such an immense respect for them, for what they're doing and how they use their platform to speak audaciously and truthfully. And it's really inspiring for me to say, okay, well, how am I living up to that with my platform, with my body, with my voice, to stand firmly in my truth and in such a way that's so heartfelt and, you know, not divisive. Because I'm not a very divisive, I'm not a very abrasive person, I'm very gentle. So when I say joy activism, like, I am showing up boldly in a space, but I'm not fighting. I'm doing so in, like, a very goofy and vulnerable way that's shifting the environment. And that's something that I watch Alok through their comedy, through their, you know, their stand-up, even just through their spoken word and like, reading their captions. I'm just like, how did you find those words to articulate something that I feel so deeply in my body? And that's just like motivation for me and for the other Bobs to show up and just be truthful, because you just don't know how it's radiating and affecting and who's receiving that and being moved and being inspired. But that's my queero, my current queero.
So what a great pick. And yeah. I'm sure that for many people, you are that too. I can't wait to hear what happens when you move to New York and see what happens when you move to New York. It's super good to meet you. I hope I get a chance to actually see you do your thing in person.
Thank you so much.